So klingt Weihnachten bei Rewe. Jetzt festlich sparen bei deinem Weihnachtseinkauf. Diese Woche bei Rewe. Frische Netzsekt, verschiedene Sorten, je 0,75 Liter Flasche nur 3,49 Euro. Und außerdem Emira Klettscheiben, Natur, je 200 Gramm Packung nur 2,22 Euro. Sichere dir außerdem bis zum 24. Dezember 10% Rewe Bonusguthaben auf Weihnachtssüßwaren. Nur in deiner Rewe-App. Frohe Weihnachten. Festlich sparen bei Rewe. Dein Markt.
The Axe of the Blood God.
Welcome to another episode of Axe of the Blood God, US Gamer's official RPG podcast. I'm your host, Kat Bailey. With me today, as always, my lovely co-host, Nadia Oxford.
Hello, everybody. It's nice and sunny here today, which is improves my mood quite a bit.
You sound incredibly calm, given that we are just 2 days away as of the recording of this podcast from E3, and oh my god, I'm having a panic attack. I don't know what to do, Nadia.
Yeah, Kat's having some problems, so everyone send her your thoughts and prayers. myself, I'm very much the kind of person who does their freaking out early, and then I enter this state of calm zen, and I just kind of stare into the distance for a while, and then I think about how big the universe is, and then I feel a little bit better about what I have to do.
See, I used to freak out because I was like, oh my god, there's so much to write. Oh my god, this is so exhausting. But then it's like, oh wait, I also have to organize it.
Yeah, that's kind of different, isn't it? Like, you're responsible for all of us. You're like one of those mothers who has like 50 kids on a leash. Nadia, stop hitting Matt. Nadia, stop it.
Because you think it's just like, oh, we'll go to the press conferences and play some games and write about them. But it's like, there's like, I'm playing like three-dimensional chess here, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, but I also have to like set up time so that people can have time to write. And then what else are we going to be covering and making sure that we get these interviews? Mm-hmm. And what's the social media plan? And
But I think like the first time I went to E3, I was so surprised at how like just thoroughly my adrenaline took over. It was like nothing else I hadn't felt. Like I forgot to eat, but the adrenaline was just insane. And yes. I think you'll be all right.
The eating part is important. Also the staying hydrated part, because I think if you're not careful, you're going to be falling apart by like day two.
Yeah, you can crash pretty hard. It happened to, I can't remember what show it was, but I did see someone collapse. They had to go to the hospital because they pushed themselves a bit too hard. So don't do that, Kat.
The absolute worst E3 I ever did was with first year US Gamer 2014, because I made a mistake. I was dumb. I stayed in, because of the hotels weren't sorted properly, I ended up staying in West Hollywood. And ooh, if you're familiar with LA at all, West Hollywood is a roughly, 15-minute drive away from the city, mm-hmm, which doesn't sound so bad, but it's actually much worse than, especially during E3. And worse even than that, in the morning, I had to contend with traffic to get over, yes, to the show floor. So that was a good 30 minutes just sitting in the car trying to get over there, which was exhausting in itself.
And yeah, then, LA traffic is legendary.
And then I'm working until 1 a.m. in like a in a cafe, like, oh my god, like, that was not a good E3 for me, for my sanity.
It's the most wonderful time of the year, Kat.
It's the most wonderful time of the year. Oh my god, no it's not, but at the same time, like, there's the energy, right? You're feeding on the energy, you're excited, like, yeah, you see all of your friends from around the country, people are flying in from literally all over the world. There are people in costumes. It feels like a giant party, right? Mm. Like, there's the excitement and the energy of the press conferences. Everybody's totally tuned in. You're seeing all these new games. You're going, oh, this is so cool. This is going to be great.
The first E3 I went to, 2006, I remember I was walking with Parrish and Sharky, and we saw, like, there were vans everywhere for Mountain Dew. And that was the first time I learned Mountain Dew was really a huge thing in America, and it was never a huge thing in Canada, and I learned why. It's because Mountain Dew in Canada, for the longest time, did not have caffeine in it.
So no kidding.
So I didn't learn until that year that that Mountain Dew is just this hyper-caffeinated beverage in America.
Oh, yeah, no.
And
yeah, sugar and caffeine.
Yeah, and Sharky and Parrish were like, well, why does anyone drink it in Canada then? And I said, nobody does.
Nobody should drink it here, too.
Yeah, it's kind
of... I'd rather have the crab juice.
Hillbilly piss, as my husband calls it.
It's a classic. All right, so we got a lot to cover, most of it RPG news. Sorry, we're not going to be doing the Chrono Trigger and Persona 4 Golden Reports as I had planned, because there's actually way too much to cover today.
Yeah, it's going to have to wait a little bit until the E3 hype dies down a bit, I suppose.
Yes, I'm thinking so. So what we are going to talk about, we're going to talk about the Pokemon announcements that happened earlier this week. We're going to be talking about Jason Schreier's massive Mass Effect Andromeda expose, and come to think of it, I should have gotten him on the podcast, but on the other hand, the man is just finishing up a book, and he is no doubt planning for E3, so that's probably a no-go.
I was going to say, like, not that he'd tell you in so many words, but I think you asked Jason Schreier to come on our podcast right before E3, he'd tell you to F off, and very nicely and very politely, but
it's like, no. No. Yeah, and we're going to talk a little bit about Etrian Odyssey 5, A Strange Journey, and Radiant Historia localizations being leaked, and we're going to do a quick E3 preview with the RPGs and what we're hoping to see out of E3. But let's get started with Pokemon Ultra Salt.
All the salt. Pokemon All the Salt.
So yesterday, which would have been a Tuesday as of the recording of this podcast, I wake up at 7 in the morning my time. That's 10 a.m. Nadia's time. And we tune in to the Nintendo Direct, and everybody's expecting Pokemon Stars. Here it comes. Mm-hmm. It's going to be on the Nintendo Switch. Everybody's excited. All right, here we go. A port of Pokemon Sun and Moon from the Nintendo Switch. Sure, yeah, it came out a year ago, but who cares?
Like, yeah.
That's fine. Like, it's going to be on the Switch. It's going to be awesome and in HD. And I loved how the Pokemon Company CEO trolled us by going, the first Pokemon game on the Nintendo Switch will be, and everybody goes,
inhale.
And he goes, Pokemon Tournament DX. And everybody goes,
ugh. Just an irritated exhale all over the world.
Like a 5-minute, like, promotional reel of all the usual Pokemon stuff, like people around the world looking happy and hanging out with the Switch and playing Pokken Tournament and everything.
It was a cute trailer,
and tell you the truth, I didn't hate Pokken Tournament. I didn't think it was amazing or anything.
I think it always looked cute to me, but I just never played it. I never bothered.
I think some of it was that it got a little repetitive for me.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't really care to continue, like, leveling up through the story, like, the challenges and everything. And, like, it wasn't that deep, right? Like, I found kind of my teams, and I was being fairly successful at them. Maybe I would have gotten completely rolled by the FGC when it came to Pokken Tournament, but it didn't hold my attention for long. I suppose it could end up being pretty good on the Switch. I don't know, but I don't know. Like, maybe it's just that fighting games aren't super my thing. But
yeah.
After Pokken Tournament, they did come out, and it looked like, oh, okay. Oh, here we go. All right. Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon for the 3DS, not for the Switch, for the 3DS, and commence all of the complaining on the internet. Oh my god, what is Game Freak doing? I'm freaking out that I'm not going to get the damn port for a Nintendo Pokemon Stars on the Switch. What are they doing? Grumble. Nadia, what were your thoughts?
You know what, at first I was kind of irritated, but then I realized, well, Pokemon has always been a very kind of a late system series. Like, hell, I mean, it extended the life of the Game Boy far longer than it should have been alive. Black White, Black 2, like, that was also extended the DS's life for quite a bit. So I'm not all that surprised, really. It'd be very stupid of Nintendo to kill the 3DS by not releasing these games on it, because the 3DS is still selling very well, and there's still a lot of demand for the system. And I could see, given how well Sun and Moon did on the 3DS, I could see Sun and Moon, Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon, being another nice boost for the system. So, and then I think about it too, is like, if I played it on the Switch and it was called Pokemon Stars, it's still the same concept, isn't it? Like another adventure in Alola. Like, so I can't get too mad.
But
about
it's on
it,
your Switch.
Yeah, I know. I can't say I'm not a little disappointed that I can't play it on the Switch, but. I'm thinking on it. I'm not as salty as I once was.
So here's my counterpoint. In the past, when they have released a third version, they have usually waited at least 2 years to be mm-hmm. able to do that. And usually they put out something else in between. Not always, but usually. Case in point, Ruby and Sapphire comes out, I believe, in the fall of 2002. And Emerald doesn't come out until 2005.
Yeah.
Diamond and Pearl come out in 2007 here, and Platinum comes out in 2009. Mm-hmm. Black and White come out in early 2011. 2011? I think it was early 2011, yeah.
Yeah.
And Black 2, White 2 end up coming out in late 2012. So it always felt like there was... And Black 2, White 2, by the way, was a sequel.
Okay. That's true, yes.
I mean, yeah, like, it's in the same universe and everything, but it's different. It has new story, the whole works. So it feels like really compressed time schedule, because it's only been about 6 months since Sun yeah. and Moon originally came out. And now they're asking us to pay for another full-price version, dual versions. They said that there's going to be an alternate story, but they did not call it a sequel.
You got a point there, yeah.
I suspect they would have called it Pokemon Sun 2 and Moon 2 if that had been the case. And so, like, I suspect that by alternate story, what they mean is something akin to what they did in Emerald, which was they unified the story of Ruby and Sapphire into one game.
Right.
And, like, added some new stuff, and then they gave Rayquaza, like, a much expanded role.
Yeah, and I like Rayquaza.
They might have some, like, added content, which I totally expect. Who knows? Like, maybe that alternate story will be, spoiler alert, at the end of Sun and Moon, one of the main characters goes off to Kanto to become a trainer. Mm-hmm. Maybe we'll follow her progress.
That'd be nice. I'd like that, actually, quite a bit.
I would be into that. And everybody's always going, I want the game that sends us to Kanto. I want the second quest from Heart Gold and Soul Silver, Gold and Silver, whatever. And actually, there might be a hint here. Because during the presentation, they announced Gold and Silver for the
yes,
eShop.
That's right. That's a good
and
point.
And of course, Gold and Silver was famous for its second quest.
Mm-hmm. Which Iwata programmed, by the way.
Yes. He famously programmed it. He was the one who enabled them to be able to squeeze all of that into one cartridge, because the man was a god of programming, which is amazing.
He really was. Oh, I miss him. But there's also very possible, I still believe, we can still hear about Pokemon Stars. It just seems weird that we would hear so much about this game, and then it just disappears into the ether. So I would not jump out of my pantaloons in shock if we hear about Pokemon Stars during the Nintendo Direct presentation, because it could, given how small these presentations usually are, maybe Nintendo wanted to get the superfluous, pardon my pronunciation there, just the lesser Pokemon news out of the way before, you know, just dedicating, zeroing in on Stars, because that would, like, kind of line up with what you said earlier about how there was usually something in between the other games or the remakes and, you know, just the new games. So I don't know. Who knows what they have up their sleeves?
So this is what I will say. I think I think that it's not an insignificant release in the sense that the 2DS XL is coming out this fall.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Nintendo wants to push that platform to squeeze out some extra sales from the 3DS. And as you will recall, there were major shortages of the 3DS when Sun and Moon came out.
Still hard to
find. So I'm sure they have that in mind when they put out Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I see this pretty strictly as a play to get one last game out before the holiday season and put it on basically bundle it with the 2DS XL. And as somebody pointed out, the 2DS XL colors are basically Sun and Moon.
That's right. That's true. I never thought of that, but that's true.
So they were already planning this. This was very much like, we're putting out the 2DS XL. It's going to have a Pokemon. It's going to be the improved version of Pokemon. People will go and buy it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not a terrible like strategy. And in that case, if they put it out on Switch, that's going to totally undermine it.
Yeah, exactly. So
because it would be like, oh, I'm going to get on the Switch. Why would I get a 2DS XL for this? I'm going to get a Switch. I'm going to get for the Switch.
Yeah, good luck.
And I'm sure they're thinking, the Switch is doing fine. It doesn't need a Pokemon right now. If we're going to put a Pokemon out on the Switch, it shouldn't be a past generation remake from the 3DS.
Right. Right.
If anything, like, that would undermine the Switch a lot, putting the previous engine, even like up-res, putting the previous engine, as nice as it looked, on the Switch would undermine it, in my opinion.
Yeah, because when Pokemon moved to the 3DS, of course, it had, like, that's when it went 3D. And it, even though Sun and Moon is still 3D in the same regard, it looks so much better than X and Y and Omega, Sapphire and Ruby.
But by the same token, like, somebody pointed out that last time they did this, Black and White came out on the DS right around kind of near the end of its of the DS's lifespan, and people were like, when Black 2 and White 2 came out, the DS was effectively dead.
Yes.
And people were like, why are they not putting this on the 3DS, which has already been out for more than a year? And it was like, they were working on a new engine for the 3DS. And people complain about X and Y, but let's be honest, X and Y is miles beyond what Black 2 and White 2 looked. As much as I love Black 2 and White 2, it looked like a full generation difference. And
it did,
so I
definitely
suspect that whenever they put this game on Switch, it's going to be with a whole new engine, it's going to be a whole new thing, and it's going to look really good, and we're not going to see it until 2019.
Yeah, if we do see anything at E3, it's definitely going to be like the tiniest of teasers. Although it's really funny how when Pokemon, I don't know if you recall, when Pokemon Sun and Moon were rumored, you and I were talking a lot about it and saying, oh, this is going to be announced for the Nintendo Switch. And it came out for the 3DS and everyone's like, what? That's a dead system. That's a dying system. Why is this happening? And then it turned out fine. So same old, same old.
Sun and Moon was great. They finally got the story right. Which
yeah,
was a
I
big
really
thing.
Enjoyed it.
And they did a good job really balancing the story with some decent post-game content. Not amazing, decent. I liked the hunts for the Ultra Monsters. That
was
fun.
Yes, that was a lot of fun.
Or the Ultra Beasts, sorry. And I liked their take on the Battle Tower with Gary and Ash. I would have liked a more substantial post-game area, as they have put in previous games, to wit, in Black and White, literally half the map becomes accessible as soon as the game is finished for you to explore. They had a special island. They have special islands in Diamond and Pearl and X and Y. So, like, there is a kind of a special area-ish that opens up once you finish, once you finish Sun and Moon, but it's not very big. And it's just the path leading up to the tower, or the battle tower, or whatever it's called. So with Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon, I'm expecting that they're going to add a fair amount. I'm guessing that they'll add some kind of new feature, like some new kind of gimmicky mode to the sort of like the PokéStars Studios. Do you remember that, Nadia?
Oh yeah, I remember that.
I loved the PokéStars Studios.
I got bored with it pretty fast, but I think you had a lot of fun with it.
I adored it because it was so funny, my God. And it was just a different take on the battle system. And I loved that when your Pokemon started a movie successfully, they got a little star.
Aw.
So when they appeared in a battle, a star would appear. That was awesome.
So you could tell other competitors, my Pokemon's a star and yours is just a plebe.
Yeah, pretty much. So it was awesome when I would release my Shining Haxorus. I would throw it. It would burst out of a Master Ball, which had an awesome like effect anyway. And then it would do the shiny effect, and it would have the star.
And everyone would just like close their 3DS, their DS, and just like walk away. Like, I'm not touching that. I'm not touching this shiny Haxorus. That's a movie star.
That was amazing.
That's pretty great.
So I've said many times before, Black 2 and White 2, my favorite Pokemon. And a lot of that is because of PokéStars Studios. A lot of that is due to the Pokemon World Tournament, which was just this amazing nostalgia tour of finding all of the all of the gym leaders from the past games. And you get that a little bit in X and Y, but not that much. You like fight Wally, you fight the main Elite Four champion from Sinnoh, that kind of thing. But by and large, like, not nearly to the extent of the Pokemon World Tournament.
Yeah.
And also, I think one of my favorite things was when you completed the Alola Dex, or not the Alola Dex, the Unova Dex, and you saw everybody. you would get access to the Secret Garden, which is where you would get your shiny Haxorus. And I thought that was awesome. That was a great gift for going out of my way to see everybody in the Unova decks. So I would like to see that in Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon.
Yeah, there are people who are saying, oh, you know, they just talk about black. When they heard the news about Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon, they started talking about black, white, and two, and about how, like, it was a cheap cash-in. But it really wasn't. It was...
What? That's garbage. There. That is ridiculous.
Yeah, I saw a sarcastic comment. Oh, because black 2 and white 2 was so good, right?
Like, it was amazing.
It is very much what you said. It was a game for people who finished the first one and just wanted to do a lot more with.
And it had a new story. I mean, what more do you want? It was much more. It was much less like platinum by comparison. Was like a cheap cash in compared to it. Even though it had a crappier version of the Battle Frontier and that kind of thing. The best that you could say is that it rebalanced the game somewhat, introduced like the new Rotom forms, and had like a new dungeon. That was pretty much it. Yeah. So like Black 2 and White 2 were miles better than Platinum, but I digress. Last note on the Pokemon thing. People who are hoping for a Diamond and Pearl remake.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. First of all, that's not what Game Freak does. They don't do two remakes in one gen.
That's
all right.
True.
When I mean gen, I mean console gen. Fire Red and Leaf Green came out in 04. Gold and Silver came out in the DS, and the Omega Ruby Alpha Sapphire came out on the 3DS.
Right.
Okay, so that's a thing. Another thing is, I don't know if they're ever going to remake it.
I have to say, Sinnoh was not my favorite.
I don't think Diamond and Pearl is a favorite generation for a lot of people. I liked it. I think that was the last time that I was really deeply, seriously into Pokemon. Was the Diamond and Pearl, like, where I was, like, really into the competitive scene in
a
way that...
It's funny that, like, people... I thought for ages that nobody liked Ruby and Sapphire, but then they remade them, and everyone just lost their shit because, I guess...
Because there are kids who grew up with them.
What's that?
It's the kids who grew up with them.
Yeah, exactly. But I didn't realize at the time because by that point, I was reading the cynical reviews like, oh, this is just more of the same. These Pokemon are boring. It's just a bird. That sort of thing.
And Hoenn is the worst region. Look at all this water.
Too much water. 7 out of 10.
Yeah, when it came out, it was kind of underwhelming at the time. But I like the Sinnoh region quite a bit. I think people were justified in feeling like it was kind of a rehash of a lot of what Ruby and Sapphire did. And at the time, the engine on the Diamond and Pearl was like really slow.
Yeah.
But... It was revolutionary at the time because it was the first Pokemon to have online play.
That's true.
Which had not been a thing until that point, and it definitely changed Pokemon. Like, the genesis of the competitive community as we know it today was definitely Diamond Pearl. Like, it goes way back. Like, all the way back to the original, like, Red and Blue, right?
Yeah, of course,
like,
right.
You had websites doing, like, competitions. You had bots on IRC that were, that were emulating the game in a way so that you could battle, like, with just waves of text coming down.
I remember that.
But that competitive community was a lot smaller
of course.
A lot more intense and hardcore. And then Diamond and Pearl came out, and suddenly everybody was looking for tips, and they walked right into Smogon, which at the time was very new. Like, Smogon's got it started in, like, 04, 05, and Diamond and Pearl came out in, like, 07. So,
yeah.
Yeah. So, I think it has its place in history. It does a lot of stuff I liked with the battle system. Actually, my happiest memories of competitive battling are in Diamond and Pearl because, like, many of the, like, major mechanical changes happen in that game. But by that same token, like, it's like, okay, but Sinnoh as a region, probably not the best region. Story, probably not the best story.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely not.
Like, on and on. So it's like, I don't know. Why would you remake these?
they've been bested already, kind of.
It may be even better to remake the original Fire. Maybe even better to remake the original Red and Blue, or try something else. Or maybe leave the remakes behind for a while.
Yeah, I honestly would not mind another remake of Red and Blue, and I think that would be the most successful, given how I think Pokemon Go proved that nostalgia is still there really strong.
I mean, the original White, Red, and Blue remake is now 13 years old.
Oh my god.
It came out on the GBA. It didn't even have animations for the monsters.
Gasp.
I know, like,
primitive.
So that happened ages ago at this point. So if you're expecting a Diamond and Pearl remake to be announced during that direct, I have bad news for you. It wasn't going to happen. All right. If they announce any kind of Diamond and Pearl remake, it will be after whatever happens on the Switch first.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
Maybe wait till 2020. Okay.
Ooh. And
also, newsflash, Omega Ruby and Alpha Sapphire weren't that good.
Yeah, I enjoyed them, but I just did not go back to them once I was done.
They were pretty underwhelming, all things considered. Yeah. Like, once you got past the main story, man, ugh. And the difference between Sun and Moon and Omega Ruby and Alpha Sapphire, like, night
crazy.
And day. Like, it's so much faster, so much more attractive, like, the whole nine yards. I don't know. All right, that's enough Pokemon.
There's never enough Pokemon.
Oh, I agree. There is never enough Pokemon. All right, Nadia, let's touch really quickly on this report from Jason Schreier over at Kotaku. Jason did a massive story, essentially, of what happened behind the scenes, what went wrong with Mass Effect Andromeda.
Mm-hmm.
If you haven't seen it yet, strongly recommend that you take a look. Yeah, you know, it's about what I was expecting, Nadia.
So pretty much there was no surprises, although I'm sure it's good to have just the confirmation of, like, a kind of a checklist of everything that went wrong, and it's a big checklist.
Yeah, well, when you looked at Mass Effect Andromeda, like, it did feel a little underwhelming. I felt a little haphazard. I was not impressed by the new setting. It felt way too limited. And the stories that come out during this, like, just confirm why.
Mm-hmm.
Like, did you see what they were originally planning for this?
Something about No Man's Sky?
Yes, apparently they came up with a No Man's Sky kind of concept before No Man's Sky was even came out.
They should have waited a bit.
And this was, like, circa 2013 or so. And they were going to have, like, hundreds of procedurally generated planets that you could go down with your Mako and explore.
Oh, boy.
But with a BioWare-style story. And that one sounds really interesting, right?
Mm-hmm. Technically, but then we remember... Well, nothing. I don't even want to trash No Man's Sky too much, because what they did on a technical level was pretty incredible. The problem was it was just so empty. I'm just not that interested in procedurally generated worlds. I would so much rather have just, like, a few really well-developed worlds to explore than something cobbled together by algorithms.
And that's kind of what happened, was they shrunk that down to about 7 planets.
A nice manageable number.
And they tried to... I mean, the planets were big-ish, but they all felt a little empty, to be honest. And the environments weren't that interesting ultimately, but what it came down to, and this is the story of every, like, troubled AAA production, was that they had a grand idea that proved not very workable and like the grand scheme of things, and had to scrap a lot and start over, and the original director left and they got a new director. And ultimately, they had to make this thing in 18 months.
Ouch. That is small frame of time.
That is a small frame of time.
And I'm guessing that also included bug testing, which might not have happened very much.
Yes, exactly. There's a passage from here that I think is just really telling. It says, some said what made the crunch worse in previous Mass Effect games was what the developers called regression. On a typical video game project, the last few months are devoted to polish, a phase of the game in which the developers can fix bugs, fine-tune mechanics, and improve existing content to make everything feel as smooth as possible. In the final months of many games that turn out to be good, developers say the game gets markedly better in the short final stretch. On Andromeda, however, everything just kept regressing. We'll put together something together, and it's been bug tested and signed off and approved, said a developer. We'd say, okay, we can now move on from that to the next thing. And while our backs are turned, what we just put together falls apart.
Oh, that's so heartbreaking.
Which explains why Mass Effect Andromeda, like, so much was like kind of ugly, and like there were like lots of weird glitches going on, and
there was all a that stuff. There was just like this hilarious glitch I saw. It was when Easy Allies was playing the game, and they were doing some shooting sequence, I don't know, and you just saw this NPC. Like, I swear to God, it was doing like a dabbing pose, and just kind of slid across their field of vision.
It also explains why so much of like the story and the aliens and like
facial
everything else felt really underwhelming. I think the facial structures, apparently they outsourced it to a company that made really great faces, but they couldn't figure out how to animate them properly.
Whoops.
And then and then the Frostbite engine, like the Frostbite engine was apparently a huge problem for them. So yeah, because the Frostbite engine had never been used for an RPG before.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So that was a learning experience, wasn't it?
It was. The Frostbite engine like has proven to be kind of a challenging thing for a lot of games, which is interesting in the light of the fact that EA put FIFA in the Frostbite engine last year.
I remember that.
And it ended up suffering from significant input delay, which was a problem. A huge problem on the Xbox particular. Mm-hmm. And Madden's moving over to it this year. So I'd be keeping a close eye on Madden.
So hopefully, even though Mass Effect Andromeda did not work out so well in the end, again, it was a learning experience.
Andromeda has its defenders.
So I've heard.
Here's another thing that they were kind of talking about, which was they basically split BioWare into three studios.
Mm-hmm. I remember hearing about that.
Because there's one in Austin, there's one in Montreal, and there's one in Edmonton. They're trying to coordinate this big project across three studios that aren't even in the same time zone.
Oh, what a pain in the ass. It's hard enough with us working like in different time zones. Imagine like working on a huge AAA project in like these different time zones. Oh man, just kill me now.
Yeah, exactly. Like having to get together the meetings and having to do like the video conferencing and having all of these problems. Meanwhile, the game's taking forever to make. Ugh, what a mess.
Yeah, and it's just, you think about it, like, people don't think too hard about time zones, but when you have, like, families and you want to be done with the day and then someone else is telling you, okay, it's meeting time, and I could see why that would just fall apart. What a world we live in.
But as always, when a AAA goes wrong, it's usually because you're getting away from the original concept a lot and you don't have a really strong unified vision that takes you all the way through.
Yeah.
As a result, you end up in crunch, and you're making a game in 18 months, and you're pushing something out the door, and then, of course, gamers are ruthless and will immediately start picking it apart. Yeah, but
yeah,
Mass Effect Andromeda's been improved. Like, they put out, like, patches to improve the faces and everything. And they've been fixing things up, but I don't know. Like, the game itself, like, I think the very premise bugged me about that game.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I liked the idea of going into Andromeda, but, like, what they did with Andromeda was so boring. It's the same damn enemies, like, except the enemies are worse and pale in comparison to the original enemy, to the original races, who are all substantially more interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And the story itself wasn't that interesting either. I mean, ugh. Like, the villains were terrible. My God.
Yeah, it's not as if, like, I've heard, oh, just the faces are weird, or, oh, there's bugs. Like, it's just, because, I mean, there's plenty of games where people look weird and, you know, there are bugs, but it's still held together by the story and the gameplay and just the interesting dialogue. I just heard everything with Mass Effect Andromeda was just so meh across the board.
Yes. So, I don't know. And then during the actual combat, like, wasn't enough enemy variety, and they would just do the whole, like, they're spawning waves of enemies who swarm at you, and I'm like, how much more boring can you get? it's a shame, because I like Mass Effect, and I would like it to be successful, and I would like BioWare to be successful, but Mass Effect Andromeda, not good.
But I guess that's why they put the series on hiatus. I guess they really kind of have to retool everything now.
Yeah, I guess so. Well, I mean, it's been speculated that it's been put on hiatus.
Right.
They've moved a lot of people out of BioWare Montreal. Like, there's been a big shift, so.
Mm-hmm.
So that they were speculating that would be on hiatus for the time being. But good luck to them.
Indeed.
All right, last bit of news. Apparently, this was leaked. Etrian Odyssey 5 and Shin Megami Tensei Strange Journey localizations confirmed for the 3DS. Mm-hmm. And also a Radiant Historia remake for the 3DS was also confirmed. So Etrian Odyssey 5 fans can let out a breath of sigh of relief, assuming this is real, because we have a release window for fall 2017. Nadia, are you excited about Etrian Odyssey 5?
I am not an Etrian Odyssey fan.
What? How can you not be an Etrian Odyssey fan?
I don't know. I'm more interested in about the SMT news, because I was thinking about, like, now that I'm into Persona, I should really start getting more into SMT. But Etrian Odyssey, I don't know. I should probably give it another go. I just wasn't engaged the first time around.
I know why.
Why?
It doesn't have much of a story.
There you go. I can be read like a book.
But at the same time, like, I mean, the story, like, unfolds as you explore. Like, it's interesting. And also, there are the Etrian Odyssey Untold games. I would especially recommend Etrian Odyssey 2 Untold.
Mm-hmm.
Because those actually have stories. Like, that has a story for you.
Yeah, okay, so I might give that a try. But I might even give Etrian Odyssey 5 a try if it comes out, like, if it is a true thing. Like, sure, why not?
Or if you don't want to do Etrian Odyssey 2, you could try Persona Q, Shadow of the Labyrinth.
Yeah, I was wondering about that one. That's kind of the same mechanic, isn't it?
Yes, I like it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it unites the characters from Persona 3 and Persona 4 into one game.
Oh, that's
fun. And you're exploring, essentially a series of contained stratums.
Mm-hmm.
And once you beat the final boss of one stratum, which kind of like comprises its own story, you move on to the next one. And there is more of a story.
So what's the deal with Dancing All Night?
Dancing All Night's a rhythm game.
I should play that one.
A rhythm game bolted onto a visual novel?
Okay, so now I'm really wondering what kind of weird-ass supplemental things you're going to do with Persona 5.
Hmm. I mean, I guess we'll see. Persona 5 proved to be pretty popular. We'll see if the characters end up being as popular. That was one of the reasons that they were able to do so much extra, mm-hmm. because people loved that cast so much.
That's true.
That it was kind of natural, right? I mean,
yeah.
The Persona 5's cast doesn't pop as much to me, so.
I've seen a lot of, like, a lot of people seem to really love them, so I'm assuming maybe we'll see more stuff. But of course, that's just America. I don't know what Japan's reaction is like. More dancing, please.
There's also going to be there's also going to be the SMT Strange Journey Redux. Which is nice, because Strange Journey is one of my favorite SMT games. How familiar are you with that one, Nadia?
Not very. When it comes to SMT, I've dedicated funneled all my energies into learning about Persona, so I don't know too much about SMT.
Well, basically, it's people liken it to The Thing a little bit, but it's actually pretty different. It just happens to be in the Arctic, but essentially... this giant black hole kind of thing opens up in the Arctic.
Cool.
And you go there with like a team of scientists and explorers go into them, mm-hmm. and discover demons.
Like you do.
And start exploring, and like you can recruit the demons and everything. And mm-hmm. as you delve deeper and deeper into this black hole wormhole thing, things get weirder and weirder and stuff like it's kind of Etrian Odyssey like,
right?
Because the dungeons are comprised different stratums, and then as you get deeper and deeper, you start running into stuff like there's a commercialization level, like you're in a shopping mall all of a sudden.
Well, shopping malls are hell. I can confirm this, having been a custodian for one.
Yeah, exactly.
And there was a twisted labyrinth beneath it. Now that I think about it,
and it plays heavily on established concepts of SMT. Like there's a religious aspect, and like.
Of course.
One character ends up kind of embodying heaven, and the other kind of embodies like the chaos of hell and that kind of thing. And like you can choose like which one you want to kind of side with, or if you don't want to go in that direction. It's a really deep and interesting RPG, and I think it ended up speaking to me more than SMT4 because I like the setting a lot.
Mm-hmm. So it's definitely one you're looking forward to then.
Yeah, well, I already finished the original on DS, so I don't necessarily know if I want to go back to it on 3DS. It's going to look that much better on the 3DS, you know, so it's like, eh.
So I'll play it. We can have an SMT report.
Oh, my God. I think people are a little SMT'd out right now.
Oh, and here I am just starting to get into it.
Did you ever play Radiant Historia?
I did not.
I think that would be one that you would like. One that I would actually recommend for you.
What was that for originally?
That was for the DS. It came out in the US back in early 2011.
Okay, so I was probably too poor or something like that. But
yes, I remember doing an ATB about it, actually, bringing an Atlas to talk about it. But yeah, a lot of people were comparing it to Chrono Trigger and Chrono Cross originally because there's a strong time travel aspect to it.
Mm-hmm.
You can travel forward and backward through a timeline to alter the course of history.
Mm-hmm.
And that gives you a lot of different endings.
Oh, that does sound quite familiar.
Yes. And the battle system's like this grid system. It's like a 3x3 grid.
Mm-hmm.
The enemy's standing in a slot and with some enemies spanning multiple slots. And basically moving around that grid is
right.
A large part of the strategy. But Historia ended up flying under the radar a little bit, maybe because it was late stage DS.
Yeah, I remember hearing good things about it, and I remember wanting to play it, but I never got around to it. So, yeah, it's definitely one of those games I'm glad it's getting a re-release because I can grab it this time around.
Yes. It got generally very good reviews. A lot of people were saying that it was one of the best RPGs to come out that year.
Sweet.
Ultimately, lots of B pluses, eights, nines, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So ultimately, a lot of people saw it as a great new example of an old school RPG, but it's oddly enough kind of forgotten. So this is one game I'm glad is coming out on the 3DS because that is a game that I would like to download from the eShop and play.
Yeah, so I guess besides Pokemon, that'll give the 3DS an extra life as well.
Yes, no, exactly. I mean, if you're looking at this year in general, it's actually a pretty strong year for 3DS RPGs still. Because not only hypothetically are you going to get these within the end of 2017, early 2018, you're also getting Pokemon.
Yes.
And you've already got Fire Emblem from earlier this year. And a lot of people ended up liking Fire Emblem, so.
Yeah, and just given how, Nintendo's having a really hard time keeping up with the demand for the Switch, it's not a bad idea at all to just really focus on the 3DS until the end of the year.
Well, I've said all the time that one of the things about this generation of games where we are now is that graphics maybe aren't as important unless you have a true, super AAA experience.
Yeah, absolutely.
Otherwise, the bulk of the games, you look at the stuff that people are playing on Steam and everything, they all, they all could have been made 10 years ago or more. Yeah. Right?
Stardew Valley, number one game.
Yeah, exactly.
SNES graphics.
So in that respect, the 3DS doesn't seem nearly as outdated as it might otherwise. It's still a great system.
Look
really good.
I am so glad we live in this era of gaming because you and I both remember when the PlayStation was no 2D games allowed. And I remember reading old reviews for Mega Man X on the PC. And of course, Mega Man X is one of the greatest action games of all time. And these reviewers were saying, why is this trash on the PC? This is a 2D bullshit game.
But meanwhile, you got Sony execs saying, why would you ever play this old game on the PS2 or PS1? They look so old.
Oh, that's so depressing. I want to kill
it. It really was pretty depressing. I think he was referring to Gran Turismo. But of course, lots of old school racing fans will quickly jump out and say, hello, old games have old tracks and we can appreciate these mechanics, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah, but I digress. I think that a lot of older games hold up extremely well on the 3DS, in particular. The 3DS, it's really kind of the ultimate expression of what you would want from old school Nintendo handhelds, right? I mean, it has so many great old Game Boy games on it. It has so you can play DS games on it anytime you want,
which is
because it has the backwards compatibility, which I use, by the way.
So do I. I play Dragon Quest on my 3DS.
I was playing Chrono Trigger on my 3DS.
There you go.
Which I mean, yeah, I was blowing up the image a little bit and washing it out, but I don't care. It's
no,
the fact that
I'm
I can do
picky.
That is cool. I'm happy. I've got and of course, there's tons and tons of great, great 3DS games. What a great handheld.
Yeah, despite its rough start, I was worried there for a while, but I think at the end it'll be remembered really, really well.
Nintendo was really aggressive with their with what they did with the 3DS, because they were this is our bread and butter. We're not letting this fail.
Yeah, And we're so super glad that they did that. I mean, I got mine early, so I was part of the ambassador program.
Mm.
But which was a nice gesture. Like I'm glad they did that. I still have all those games.
I wish I had gotten them.
I'm sorry.
Because a lot of them never came out. Like they put out GBA games and stuff.
Yeah, they did. Drag.
All right. Let's move on and talk a little bit about our E3 2017 and what we are, our hopes and dreams for it. So we'll be right back and don't go away. All right, Nadia, my hope and dream for E3 2017 is not to die.
There's no guarantees there, Kat. That's why it's a hope and a dream.
All right, so I'm going to just list out some things that I'm kind of hoping to see, and we will see like how it goes, all right? So okay. I would like to see literally any progress on Final Fantasy VII Remake or Kingdom Hearts 3.
Yes, please.
Some kind of trailer?
Some kind of
acknowledgement that things are happening?
Something other than a still picture? Here you go.
Yeah, that would be really nice. Maybe I could see that being at, say, the Sony press conference.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to see Bloodborne 2.
I'm curious about that one. I feel like that could be 50-50, yeah. I have Bloodborne, I just haven't played it.
I don't think we're going to see anything.
You don't think so?
I don't know.
The other day,
I've been predicting for a while that they would show it at PSX.
That's true. But the other day I retweeted a picture someone put up on their Twitter account of Bloodborne Kart or Bloodborne Racing, something like that, and said it was a leak from E3.
The thing is that Miyazaki, like, he's not working on Bloodborne. Like, he handed it off. Like, he's working on other stuff right now. He's working on other, like, he's done with Soulsborne, and he specifically said that he wants to make something else right now. Mm. He wants to go back to From Software's rather quirky roots.
Something happy and sunny and colorful.
Well, just make another Armored Core, man. And make it pretty this time.
Good luck with
so
that.
I don't know, like, even if Bloodborne 2 is announced, like, it might actually end up being underwhelming.
That's true. But, you know, I don't necessarily believe that even if a series is handed off, that means it's going to... Well, then I think it's Suikoden, and I'm like,
Yeah, like, you start to lose the original vision. Like,
you do.
I think there are people who are, like, super defenders of Dark Souls 2 and, like, get really mad when you say that it's bad. And, no, it's not bad. It's not bad. But it's also the least good.
The least good. That's a good way of putting it.
It's the worst Dark Souls game, which is to say that is still amazing, but not as good as any of the others.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, I can appreciate that.
All the Soulsborne fans are just like about to kick down my door, by the way.
They're just banging on it right now.
Start lecturing me. But if Bloodborne 2 is announced, I'm going to get John Learned on here and have him talk about it.
Oh, he'll have things to say, I'm sure.
Yes, he's our Soulsborne expert, and so is Matt, actually. So
yeah, Matt's big into it.
He'll have things to say. He's a big Soulsborne guy. So, and we'll be recording an episode during E3 so that we can be talking about that.
I won't be there. I'm sorry, everyone.
Besides that, I think the thing that I'm most interested to see is perhaps news out of Bethesda.
Yeah.
I want to see if they confirm anything that they're going to be working on RPG-wise. Like, there was rumors of a Fallout in space.
Now that... Oh, the Fallout can't get to the space. Well, it's I guess if like it goes Starfield. Up to the stratosphere.
I mean, I would play a Fallout where you fly a spaceship and go from planet to planet in a heartbeat.
But how would the post-apocalyptic theme
But work? It wouldn't be a Fallout. It'd be a different thing. It's just in that
format. Oh, okay, okay.
Like Fallout style, but you're in space.
Okay, now I'm less confused. All right. I understand where you're coming from.
That kind of thing. So I don't think so. Like, I think that's like a major long shot. I think it's, I don't know, like, it doesn't feel like this is the year.
Probably not. I'm thinking something in the veins of Skyrim Remastered.
No, they're not going to do that again.
Skyrim
if you recall, Fallout 4... got teased in 2015.
Mm-hmm. I remember that.
And they started the countdown right in time for the Bethesda press conference. And when that timer ran to zero at the press conference and they did a giant reveal and then said it's coming out in like 4 months.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed that.
That's their MO. I think that's what they're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
They have not been any hints at all that there's going to be a new RPG coming out.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess we'll see.
Yeah,
I
definitely.
Think it's the speculation is that their main focus is going to be The Evil Within 2,
mm-hmm.
Which is the game made by the guy who did Resident Evil 4 originally,
mm-hmm.
and Wolfenstein.
Yeah, Wolfenstein is very likely.
Yeah, so in which case, I think I've said before, like, it's looking a little barren for RPGs. I mean, we're going to have Pokemon, we're going to have Etrian Odyssey 5, potentially. That's exciting. But beyond that, like, a lot of the major players, CD Projekt Red, yeah, Bethesda, they're... BioWare, even Square Enix to some extent, not really going to be kind of around, I suppose, this fall.
Everyone's kind of recovering, or in Square Enix's case, trying to make something.
I guess so. Yeah, there's going to be a Final Fantasy XII HD coming out this summer.
Yeah, which I'm looking forward to.
Yes, but beyond that, like, actually, it's a pretty barren schedule for Square Enix in general.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
My personal hope, and this is something I wrote about on US Gamer, is that Nintendo will give us another Zelda RPG in the vein of A Link Between Worlds, something that's like a remake, but like a really reimagined remake of a 2D Zelda game.
Yeah, I don't know.
Link's Awakening.
I think during the Nintendo Direct, like from what I can tell, like, one of their main focuses is going to be like Fire Emblem Warriors.
Yay.
They're going to be pushing Super Mario Odyssey and Fire Emblem Warriors.
Odyssey, I'm definitely looking forward to seeing. Fire Emblem Warriors, I'm really lukewarm on Musou games, so
it's another Warriors game.
Exactly.
I don't understand why Nintendo is like, yeah, just keep putting these out.
I think Hyrule Warriors did fine. Maybe that's why.
Yeah. Did they do another one? Was there a different one besides? I keep conflating Dragon Quest Warriors.
No, that's not Nintendo though.
Dragon Quest Heroes, but that's not Nintendo.
No.
And Fire Emblem is like a natural fit for Nintendo, but I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Are there any other RPGs that we might see that I'm missing?
I don't think... I can't recall anything off the top of my head. Like I said, everyone's kind of in a lull right now, which is fine. Everyone worked really hard over the past couple of years, but, you know, they need time to kind of reconvene and reprogram and replan, but... Yeah.
One of the sneaky, most interesting RPGs that are going to be shown is Yakuza 6.
Yeah. That's true. Oh, we did forget Octopath Traveler is one. We're probably going to see something about...
You think so?
I think so. And Xenoblade 2. It's supposed to be coming out this year.
No, it's not.
What do you mean?
It's coming out this year.
This is hopes and dreams, Kat.
They didn't even show, like, anything. It's, like, barely in pre-production.
Well, we might see something.
Yeah, no. There's not going to be any Xenoblade this year. It's probably not even going to come out next year. Like, we'll be lucky to see it next year. There's going to be the new Tokyo RPG Factory game.
Oh, that, of course. Lost Sphere.
If you want to count Destiny 2 as an RPG, that will be there too.
Mm-hmm.
So that will be a biggie, I guess.
But Yakuza is, I've watched my husband play Yakuza 0 and it looked like a lot of fun, so...
Pillars of Eternity Deadfire will be there.
That's true.
Yeah, Atlas is bringing 13 Sentinels Aegis Rim to the West.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be a mecha game.
Oh boy.
It was originally shown at E3 2015. It seems to be a little different from your standard vanillaware game.
Yeah, definitely. It's got like a bit of a darker
and,
sort of
that vanillaware
shade
game
to
that was
it?
Reported the other day.
Ooh,
most vanillaware
yes,
games are like hyper colorful.
Vanillaware
game.
I forgot. I forget that what that one's called, but I'm actually really interested in it because you have like a purple
I really enjoy and
you
good,
have like a yellow game and that kind of thing. Like it's not as vibrant, but it's still really interesting. Also, the characters aren't as over the top.
Yeah, I noticed that.
Like the main character doesn't have her boobs exploding everywhere. They look like normal people.
Yeah, that's a little shocking.
They're putting all the emphasis on the mechs and stuff. I'm really excited.
I'm sure you are.
I'm into Vanillaware, and the fact that it has mechs and that kind of thing is super exciting. I don't think it's coming out this year.
Probably not.
But I'm glad that it's being. I'm glad that it's coming out at some point in the near future.
Yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to hearing more about it.
Yeah. So beyond that, I suppose that we could see some kind of really interesting announcement, but nothing is springing to mind necessarily right now. I mean, sure, would be nice to see like Knights of the Old Republic or something that like that coming coming back. But I think that in terms of really exciting RPG news, it's going to be a little subdued this year.
Yeah, and I guess that's not so bad. You're going to have enough on your plate.
Yeah, no, God knows. God knows I totally will. I mean, just covering all the stuff coming out of like EA with like, I'm actually legitimately looking forward to Battlefront 2 and things like that. So maybe it will be less of an RPG filled world. But you know what? We still got plenty of games to play.
We really do. Like, I can't complain too much.
We did get our Persona 5 earlier this year.
Yeah. Yeah, you still got to get to that.
Oh, God. Yes, I do. And then, of course, Final Fantasy 14, the big Final Fantasy 14 expansion's coming out. We just got the Elder Scrolls Online expansion. And then once this fall comes out, Etrian Odyssey 5 is going to keep me plenty busy. Okay, as usual, we are going to be going through some of the comments that were from the previous episode. One person, Step Out, says, should any disciples stumble upon the dead fire of Archipelago while questing at E3, it would be nice to hear a thing about how things are going there. Also say hi to Edder for me. God, Blood God be praised. Referring, of course, to the Pillars of Eternity 2 Deadfire. I will definitely try to get a look at it. I'm pretty busy, but I'm excited for Pillars of Eternity 2. And that, I believe, actually is coming out this fall. So there you go. That's another big one.
We're all right.
It's going to be a lot of the smaller mid-sized RPGs.
Right.
And
which is fine with me, God knows.
Indies, that kind of thing. Oh, Divinity Original Sin 2.
There you are.
I can't forget that one. Oh, no, Nadia, be excited. Be excited. We're going to do that in co-op, and it's going to be great.
I look forward to it.
So try to restrain your enthusiasm, Nadia.
It's good for me to expand my horizontals.
We were talking about Elder Scrolls Online last week, and Talrayan says, your comments about MMOs remind me of when Ultima Online first came out. A big Ultima fan, I was super excited about a game that was just an alternate world to inhabit. Turns out that at launch, the gameplay mostly consisted of being murdered by more powerful players and having them steal all your stuff.
When I have a friend who was big into Ultima Online back like when it was a big thing, and he was telling me the story, and he sounded so like upset when he told it to me, but I was trying not to laugh because he basically gave a really expensive sword to a blacksmith to appraise, and the blacksmith took off with it, and I'm dying because I'm thinking of that bit in The Simpsons where Homer goes to New York and he's trying to talk to the cop about how something of his got stolen. The cop's nodding sympathetically and just grabs his suitcase and runs.
This is literally the second Simpsons reference to the same article in one episode.
I have a million of them.
I'm pretty impressed. But he said, which is to say, I always wanted what you want out of MMOs, but I've had it repeatedly beaten into me why we will never have it. People are the worst. Embrace the theme park. Fair enough, I guess. Though, of course, I like that EVE Online happens because there's so many great stories.
Is there?
Oh, God, yes. Have you looked at those, all the EVE Online stories? They're incredible.
Oh, I think you told me about those. Yeah, they're pretty impressive.
Yeah, that's an amazing game. Donald T. reminds me that Monster Hunter X did come out in the West. It was called Monster Hunter Generations.
Oh, that's right.
Yes, that completely like flew out of my mind. It's crazy.
No, Monster Hunter, like I said, it is something I'm going to get into. And I mean, I was talking about Monster Hunter XX or Cross or whatever the hell they're calling it. That's another game that's coming out sooner than later, I'm sure.
Yes. I was saying that Nintendo was going to have its two killer apps in Monster Hunter and Pokemon. They're going to have to wait a little longer for the Pokemon.
Mm-hmm.
Alas. That's true. Terry Donnie Jr. Sr. says, "So I Am Setsuna had bland characters, music, battle system, and wasn't cozy enough? I like that. I think U.S. gamers should implement coziness as a regular grading criteria for the reviews from now on."
It's like graphics, sound, fun factor, coziness.
Yes. Interesting in general. And speaking of I Am Setsuna, Moroboshi says, "The dreadful music in I Am Setsuna killed it for me. Music is such a big part of RPGs. Whoever thought monotonous solo piano was a good idea for the entire game really needs to find a new career. It was truly awful." Was it that bad? It wasn't that bad.
No, the music itself, like I said, like, it was fine. It was very pretty, but the fact that they used it so much really called attention to the fact, hey, we're just getting a piano. And I, you know, with RPG music, yes, you do have to strike that careful balance. That's why I guess so many either opt for these really rich orchestrated soundtracks to the whole thing, or else they just kind of hold off and go for the more sparse sort of environment you have with, like, Skyrim and Breath of the Wild.
Hmm. And finally, the challenger says, "I Am Setsuna has one of the most bland bestiaries I've ever come across. The original Final Fantasy had a broader and more diverse enemy set, and that game came out 100 years ago."
Wow, 100.
I mean, it's not wrong. Like, a great bestiary can be really important to an old-school RPG like this.
No, I totally agree. There's only one enemy that stands out to me in that game, and it was basically a big sort of plesiosaur, but had, like, an orca for a head. And I thought that was really awesome.
I mean, if you look at it, like, Pokemon, in many respects, is descended from Dragon Quest, and that Dragon Quest has an amazing bestiary.
Absolutely.
Like, I'd say that the monsters are the real stars of Dragon Quest, right?
Oh, 100%. I like Akira Toriyama very much, but his human designs are really boring. I really enjoy his monster designs.
Yes, no, they're so interesting to look at, right? And they're, like, so whimsical and fun.
They remind me, like, of the kind of stuff I draw as a kid, except they're, like, just really well put together. Because when you're a kid, you draw like an idiot, but he just puts all these pieces together so nicely. Mm. I love it.
Mm. And then, of course, Final Fantasy also has its amazing bestiary. Like,
yeah, you know what? I was never a fan of the original Final Fantasy, but I just loved the way it adapted Yoshitaka Amano's original designs. It did it really well.
But, and if you look at SMT, like, yeah, they're basing it a lot on, like, established mythology and everything, but that is also, like, an amazing, has an amazing bestiary with a lot of very familiar faces, starting with Jack Frost.
I love Jack Frost. I was playing Persona 5, and I came up against King Frost, and I made him enraged, and he was just like, "Kill all humans, hee-ho, kill all humans, hee-ho," over and over again. It was fantastic.
See, like they all have personalities. They're all really interesting. They aren't just some randos that you're fighting. Like,
yeah,
they give color and texture and character to the game.
Yeah, even now with Persona 5, even though I'm like 100 hours in, I always feel a little bit bad when, like, enemies start begging for their life, and I'm just like, I'm not going to spare you. I have no use for you, but I feel bad, and then I kill them.
I mean, and then it goes all the way back to D&D, for God's sake. Like, where you had whole books full of monsters.
Yeah, I have, even though I don't play D&D, I have, like, the Draconicon. Basically, the Book of Dragons.
I mean, so you could just look at dragon porn, essentially.
Basically, that's 100% what it is. Just without the actual literal porn, because that does exist, I'm sure. I haven't looked hard into it.
All right. And with that, Axe and Blood God is a U.S. Gamer podcast. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever podcasts are sold. Please do me a favor. Leave us a review if you enjoy the podcast. Tell us why you're enjoying the show. We love to hear from you. Many ways to connect to us. Find us on Twitter and Facebook at U.S. Gamer Net. Find me on Twitter at @the_catbot and Nadia at Nadia Oxford. Send us an email. If you want us to read your email on the show at usgamer@usgamer.net, feel free to comment on what we were talking about during the show. We would love to hear your thoughts on E3, Etrian Odyssey 5, Final Fantasy, whatever, Persona. Talk about any RPG you want, to be perfectly honest. If you really want that Pokemon Diamond and Pearl remake, we want to know why.
Yeah, justify your decision.
No, seriously, why? I don't understand.
Help Kat understand. Be a good citizen.
Look at it this way. If we went back to Diamond and Pearl, I would want to get rid of all of the Pokemon that came before it, that came after that.
Really?
Like, I would want a Diamond and Pearl remake that did not have any of the new monsters.
Hmm, that's an interesting.
I would want to go back to the 490 some monsters that were in Diamond and Pearl. Why would I want to do that? Because I think Diamond and Pearl, like, that was the perfect Pokedex. Okay? You finished with Arceus, and that was it. You didn't need to go any further. You had God.
Yeah, he was God, wasn't he?
Yes. There are great monsters in Gen 5, Gen 6, Gen 7. Don't get me wrong. There are some amazing monsters. But I think that it was superfluous. Like, there were only so many monsters that you could come up with at a certain point. And as in terms of, like, the breadth and depth of the monsters, I just really liked, like, the thing that was nice about Diamond and Pearl, like, everybody was like, oh, Diamond and Pearl's Pokedex was the worst. Well,
I heard that.
Yeah, but it also refined a lot of monsters that needed refining, like, from Gen 2. Like, Gligar, or whatever, became Gliscor and became, like, much better. Like, this bat thing with, like, a scorpion tail. Mamoswine became a thing.
I love Mamoswine.
Became, like, this giant mammoth that was a lot more fun, a lot more interesting. So on and so forth. Like, so many, like, good evolutions came out of Diamond and Pearl.
That's
like,
true.
They refined the Pokedex in a lot of respects. And yeah, like, some of the stuff, like, what was it, Purugly and Skuntank.
Poor Purugly. Hey, I like Skuntank.
We're not that great, but we also had Krogunk.
Oh, God, did we ever. Ugh. So you're gonna bash on Skuntank, but, like, but you're pro Krogunk? Is that what I'm hearing?
Oh, yeah,
here?
Toxicroak's great. And it had a good, like, first three starters.
That's true.
Even the anime was great. Like, the anime was the best anime since the original first season.
I'm actually blanking. Their starters, that wasn't Piplup, was it?
That was Piplup. You had Infernape, and you had the turtle.
Okay, yeah, I remember now. And I've seen pictures of Piplup, like, in fan art of that poor penguin in Japan who's, like, heartsick for this anime cutout. Someone drew that scene just with Piplup, like, agonizing over a cutout of his trainer. It was so sad.
Well, my point is that was perfect. And then power creep became a huge thing in later games, like, tons more legendaries.
Yeah.
It was just in a much better place with Diamond and Pearl. And I really liked stuff that they introduced, like the choice scarf, which made you faster and locked in, but at the expense of locking in your moves. I really liked that they introduced, like, U-turn. Like, the variety and depth of the teams were really interesting. Diamond and Pearl was the first time that they introduced the concept of, like, in the original Ruby and Sapphire, certain classes were always a certain type of move. So, like, fire was always special attack, and fighting was always physical.
Right.
Which meant that certain monsters were just screwed. Because they could not get a good same type attack bonus from their moves. Because they, like, Arcanine was, like, maybe not Arcanine was a bad example. There are some monsters that just were screwed. And then that was no longer the case in Diamond and Pearl. Like, it changed move sets. Like, Gyarados became very different. Like,
right.
Gyarados went from using flying moves to using water moves. Like, the current Gyarados set had its genesis in Diamond and Pearl.
Yeah,
I really liked Diamond and Pearl. And if we went back to Diamond and Pearl, like, I don't necessarily care about the region. The region's nice. It had some good music. The story was okay-ish, but I really just want to go back to the days of 493 monsters.
Wow, to think that was a small number at some point.
Anyway, if you have thoughts on that, talk to me in the comments or send me an email, usgamer@usgamer.net. Beyond that, USGamer is heading to E3 2017.
Ooh.
We will be covering all of the press conferences. We will be live blogging. We will be following all of the news and having all of the reactions. We will be on the social medias. So follow us on Twitter @USGamerNet and Facebook, and you will have all of the updates. And, of course, follow everybody on the good old-fashioned US Gamer team. I'm going to do a Follow Friday. so that you know how to reach everybody, so that you can be in touch with the entire US Gamer team. We are going to be so goddamn busy. We're going to run around till our eyeballs fall out, running.
Not me. I'll be sitting at home.
As Weird Al, you would say, like a constipated wiener dog.
There's an image.
So yeah, look forward to that. So that's going to be an entire week. I cannot wait. I am, in fact, pretty excited. So, and by the way, I will be bringing my microphone down with me, so I will be looking to record an episode of Acts of the Blood God with Mike and Matt while we are at the show, so that we can comment on all of the RPG stuff that ends up coming out of the show. Who knows, there could be quite a few really good announcements.
Yeah, you know what, E3 is all about surprises, and I'm looking forward to it.
Yes, that is indeed. Until then, we'll be back next week, probably considerably more tired, because we are going to be recording toward the end of E3. But look forward to that. We'll be back next week, as always. Thanks for listening. And until next time, for Nadia and myself, happy adventuring.
Persil sorgt schon seit 1907 für tiefenreine Wäsche, auch bei den Johnsons, oder Anna?
Das stimmt. Sogar meine Oma hat schon mit Persil gewaschen.
Und als Dankeschön für über 100 Jahre Vertrauen gibt's jetzt bis zu 15 Euro Rabatt auf unser Bestes.
Das mit der roten Schleife.
Genau, made in Germany. Mehr Infos auf unserbestes.persil.de.
Wenn es tiefenrein ist, ist es Persil. Unser Bestes.